Science Radio. Man in Line.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Max Radio. It's your chance to have your say, because we're open line through till 1 o'clock today. Text 166 177. WhatsApp 166 177. But you'll need us in your contacts. Email studio at maxradio.com. Pick up the phone, call 66 13 68. We're supposed to have our first cruise liner today at 1 o'clock today. The Hamburg is supposed to be arriving. I don't know whether the state of the sea has put Hamburg off. Manannan's been doing the trips today. Went to Heysham this morning, back this afternoon, then off to Liverpool. Manxman will be on duty this evening. But the Manxman's been spinning around in Douglas Harbour, creating a lot of mud. Don't quite know what they're up to, but it looks very interesting. Howard's with us first. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. Yes, I was just asking, Howard, does that cruise liner arrive? But I didn't realise it's 1 o'clock. Well, what was coming on for? I went into town yesterday, walking through from the Sefton end of the street, Castle Street, through from Sam Webb's, where the construction's going on, and right the way up through, and I got up as far as boots, basically.
Yeah.
And I noticed all on the street itself, it looks like oil has been spilt. And I don't mean a couple of little drops of it, a serious amount of oil. And it's the full width of the street, all the way through, and even some places dropping down the walls of some of the shops. And it looks like a hydraulic oil, because it's actually gone into the stonework that's in the street. And I thought to myself last night, we got our first cruise liner coming in, and this is the thing that's going to greet them as they're walking through the street. What on earth have we come to?
Wow, and so that's from
the Sam Webb end? Sam Webb end, yeah, and it goes right the way through, through Castle Street, through Strand Street. I don't know if it gets to the other end or not,
right.
But I didn't go that far.
So is it on the pavement?
Oh, it's on the whole walkway, right the way through Strand Street.
Right.
From one side of the street to the other.
It sounds like something's been sprayed, Howard.
It does. And I notice now, this is only a guess, the Christmas lights are taken down. They've gone. Now, whether it was a fault with the cherry picker, a leak of hydraulic oil from the cherry picker,
right,
I do not know. But that's what gives me the impression, because it's the full width of the street in places. And, this is what sorts... It looks dreadful. And if you think what we come through from, say, Victoria Street next to Starbucks.
Yeah.
That big shop there, Wallace's it used to be, that was part of Philip Green's empire. And that's been empty, 10 years?
Easily 10 years, yeah.
Yeah. And then you move down through and you've got several other shops. There's work going on, Superdrug expanding into the old camping place.
Yeah.
That's work in hand. But we've got the birdcage there. There's nothing more heard about that.
It's interesting because it's been said that something's going to be done with it. But, they're hardly putting their foot down with it. And the, as you say, the iron frame, the skeleton's been there for ages and ages and ages since they knocked down the KFC there and everything else. So, you wonder what's happening there.
I'm not au fait with the building works, but that has been in an environment, a salt sea environment, for X number of years. Will that have to be inspected now, that structure, before they can go ahead with any work?
And not only that, you would think that the the actual property developers will be happy to tell us the good news if something is going to happen.
Yep.
And as yet, we haven't heard anything apart from the notional kind of idea that it is going to happen, but they've been saying that for years. The other thing is, by the time everything's built up around the old half of the back end of the Villiers, there's going to be no space for building vehicles. You won't get building vehicles. Fort Street is tiny and narrow, It looks to me like they're going to have to close off Duke Street to get builders' wagons down there.
Well, that's not going to be conducive to good business.
Well, I would imagine the retailers will have something to say about that.
Exactly, and Marks and Spencers won't be overjoyed. You know, we're coming down through that way. Heavy vehicles will be coming in one end and going out the other.
The thing is, they're cracking on with the Travelodge and everything that's going to go there.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they're working on Saturdays, most Saturdays. So they say it's going to be open for TT next year, March 27. It's all going to be open. It's going to be huge when it's open.
80 bedroom, isn't it?
It is, but I mean, everything else that's going with it, there's going to be retail and all sorts of things going on there. So it'll be a handsome old building, and it's tall as well. It's big. But I mean, that leaves that skeleton, the iron skeleton on Duke Street, very much in the shadow. And I would say completely, you can't get to it. It won't be approachable. It won't be practical to get builders' wagons in there. They'll be taking cement and mortar in wheelbarrows.
I don't know what they've built at the back of the travel lodge, but that was a substantial concrete block. Now, I don't know what it is, but that is that's on the land that was allocated to them.
Yeah.
So they're not encroaching on anything else. But that, again, as you rightly say, is going to inhibit any access to it. But what I was saying about the oil all the way through, if that was, now this is only an assumption on my behalf, if it was the cherry picker belonging to the electricity of the Douglas Corporation, that should have been reported and cleaned. Because if you're looking, and anybody that goes through the street, it doesn't take much to clean it down when it's fresh. But this has been, it's gone into the stonework now in the street. So it's going to have substantial work put to it to get it clean and ready for the summer. But you look at the number of empty buildings as you go through the street. You know, it's a sorry state, Strand Street, and this is supposed to be our city centre.
Well, the thing is, I can guarantee anybody coming over from the UK will recognise it. And Strand Street is still a lot better than most UK high streets, because there it normally goes tattoo parlour, charity shop, coffee shop, tattoo parlour, cash converters, things like that, and pawn shops. So, PAWN I'm talking about. So, but we've still got a lot of, the fact that Next is going to be departing fairly shortly as well. But I'm presuming something else will go into there. But as you say, times are tough, and retailers will tell you it is very, very tough. People haven't got as much disposable income now. I don't know about you, but I filled up the car the other day. It's the first time I filled a car over £100 to fill a car. So, it's very, very, it's the cost of living has shot up with what's happening in the Gulf. So, well, we'll wait and see.
Again, as I say, as I walked through, I saw the untidy state of the shops. They're not. There doesn't seem to be any pride in it. Okay, the Freedom Travel, that chap is unable to conduct his business now. I can't remember his name. Nice man.
Mr. Wozniak. Mr. Wozniak.
That's it, Jan Wozniak. Now, that business has been closed for a couple of years. There's bits and pieces. There's various other shops in different parts of Strand Street. It gives a dismal effect. And, and when you get over, okay, they're rebuilding, but Devereaux's that was there, they moved into Strand Street at the moment. That shop is semi-derelict because they're working on it. The one or two next to it have been knocked down and the boards are up.
Oh, on the corner of Senna Road.
That's it. There's nothing attractive about those boards. They could at least have put some, you know, nice pictures on them and give a bit of... they would have done that somewhere. But here, they just shoved up the boards and a sign saying road closed. But somebody should go down and have a look at that street from the council and make an effort to clean it before we have the summer upon us.
Well, if anybody knows what's happened, whatever this stain is that's up and down Strand Street and Castle Street, how it's been caused and who's going to do something about it, then we'd like to know, really, because obviously, plainly, something's happened, Howard.
Yep, it has. And it's not just a small amount, it is a considerable amount, and it looks like it's been dropping out of a hydraulic arm and leakage on that.
Right.
But I thought, well, previously it was always that takeaway shop that was next in there by the tattoo shop, as you mentioned, in Castle Street, but that's gone. But I thought, ooh, where's this? And I followed it. It was a sad life. I followed it through to, as I say, I got as far as Boots, and it was right the way up through. You can trace it right the way up through quite easily.
Okay.
So it's, where are the men that's down there? There's two, I don't know whether they were bylaw officers walking through Castle Street yesterday, but they didn't seem to be taking any notice of anything. They were too busy talking between themselves and walking through. But this is something that should be left, should be done before the summer season comes upon us, where we, if we're lucky enough, we get a few visitors.
Okay. All right, Howard, thanks for calling today.
Okay, take care.
All right. Bye now. So who knows what's happened in Castle Street and Strand Street? What's stained the pavements and possibly gone up and down some of the buildings as well? And Harry dropped a note in and said, while they're at it, could he get some of the retailers to actually clean their windows? Wasn't there once upon a time somebody used to go up and down Strand Street cleaning windows on a daily basis? I don't think it happens now. How do you feel about carrying IT when you travel by sea? When you go on the boat, government's consulting on the matter, but Department of Home Affairs says it could help to strengthen the Isle of Man's borders. Historically, when you travel via the steam packet, you haven't had to provide identification as a condition of carriage. Just pitch up with your ticket and there you go. But all that could change. Justice and Home Affairs Minister Jane Paul Wilson, MHK.
So what we're proposing at the moment is that there should be a mandatory requirement for people to carry identification with them when they are travelling to and from the island, with proportionate verification of that ID. And what we wanted to consult on is, we recognise this is a change. So as we've said, some of us carry our passports. Most people who have flown on and off the island will be familiar with the requirement, depending on the airline, that they may have to show identification. But it may be a change. We recognise that for some people. And so in bringing forward this proposal, the reason we wanted to consult was to really make sure we've understood the implications of bringing this in. And so the questions we're asking really is around, you know, do people sort of foresee any challenges with this? Are there groups of people who may struggle to carry ID? What types of ID, so that we can make sure this is an inclusive proposal? Practicalities as well around, you know, the checking in and the travelling and so on.
We still have a common travel area between Republic of Ireland, UK and Isle of Man. That's not changed as such. It's just, this is a measure really to tighten up on security.
Yes, that's correct. So within the common travel areas, you say that that absolutely exists. And one of the things that is important that goes with the common travel area is the freedom of travel without immigration, without sort of hard border customs and immigration stop points. So you're right, this measure is targeted around our security. I guess there is some overlap with the area of immigration, because we are conscious that unfortunately organised criminality can extend into immigration fraud and immigration criminality. So to the extent that we're talking about security in the broadest sense, it is about targeting serious and organised crime, however that manifests, to protect the security of the Isle of Man.
How do you feel about it? What do you think? Showing identification and what it's going to be? Well, presumably it won't be a passport. Maybe driving licence, anything like that. What would you be content to do? As Jane Paul Wilson has said, and She's brought it up over the past few years when she's been on Man in Line, as has the Chief Constable. Our borders have been, putting it mildly, somewhat porous. What can we do? And do you think it's an infringement on your civil liberties to show identification if you get on the boat? What do you think? Text, email, call, WhatsApp. Peter's with us now. Hi, Peter.
Oh, hello, Andy. Yes, I began to wonder first, have you got a... You haven't got someone in the studio with you today, no?
No, no, not today, no.
Ah, right, okay, yeah. Well, I've just rung about the latest development that's come from Britain with regard to the sending of this the assisted suicide bill back.
Yeah.
The thing is that it seems rather likely that they're going to drop this in Britain. Scotland hasn't proceeded with it. Wales originally voted against it, and so it puts the Isle of Man out on a limb. And I somehow wonder whether the powers that be in Britain will be happy about an offshore territory having a piece of legislation anyway, given the fact that we have a close relationship with regard to health matters in Britain. So I think that's probably going to become a complication. I have a sort of feeling it's not going to get through in from the Isle of Man anyway, but it's just worth making one or two points here that of which account really should be taken, and they're primary points. I've already identified a number of very serious deficiencies in the bill, but those aren't the primary points. Those are really secondary. The primary point is, as I've made repeatedly, and it's very important with regard to finance, that we've got two conflicting strategies, one for the provision of assisted suicide and one for the prevention of assisted suicide, which just cannot be the proper expenditure of public money. They need to decide which one they want. They can't have both. But following on from that, when you look at public expenditure, I made an inquiry, and my latest information, reliably given, was that they haven't costed out how much this bill would entail. Now, that to me seems really very remiss, given the fact that they are constantly in overspend with regard to public health, and not to know what you're committing yourself to doesn't sound like very good government. The other thing, of course, is, and I've made that point, but it needs to be continually made because we're coming close to a general election and we need to query the powers that be about the way that the money's being spent. So you've got two issues there, both involving public money. But the primary point, again, it hasn't been the one that's been top of the focus by any means, but it should be. When the general election's over, the newly elected members will be required to take an oath of allegiance to the Crown. Now, part of that oath of allegiance, as I've said, and I just have to keep reminding people till eventually they take notice, and that is this, that you're putting the Crown in an impossible position with this bill, because Parliament, not the Crown, Parliament decided that the Crown must take an oath whereby, to the utmost of the Crown's power, they will maintain the laws of God and the true profession of the gospel. Now, the Crown didn't invent that. It was Parliament that invented that, and Parliament has not rescinded it. And if the incoming monarch refused to take that oath, he couldn't be king. And so, really, their oath of allegiance, which they will take once members are re-elected, just the same as last time, really implies that they've got to assist the Crown to perform this solemn oath that King Charles III was bound to take. And they can't do that at the same time as presenting a bill that in actual fact breaks the coronation oath. That is the primary point. And so it really supersedes all the other points, more than the finance. And I think the sooner that that's taken into account, the better. And the sooner that they just abandon this bill, which has been shown for secondary reasons to be a bill that shouldn't be passed, I think it's the better.
Dr. Allinson, I mean, hope springs eternal. He's the man who started all this. He seems to think it may yet be salvageable, in his words anyway, before the end of this administration.
Well, yes, I suppose if I was moving a bill, I would take an optimistic view as well if I was in his position. And I understand that he would wish to say that because obviously it's his piece of legislation. Over and above the human rights questions, and I've noted those down, there are a number of serious deficiencies in it. And I've actually supplied the legislature with a list of the serious deficiencies that are in it, over and above what Britain's pointed out. One of them is, and I can't obviously explain them in a short call to the man in line, but one of them arises at the very point of death. There's a very, very unsatisfactory thing that whereby you don't necessarily have a general medical practitioner present there, so there might be complications. Whoever's there, and it might be a person who's not well versed in dealing in complications, they don't have to be in the room necessarily. They can be outside the room, so a crisis could arise of which they could be unaware. So I fail to see how that could be what they call a good death. And the third thing is that there is a complex provision, although it sounds simple enough, about the fact that they can give assistance to the ingesting of the approved substance. But of course, the final act of taking it has got to be by the patient. Now, when you remember that many of the people who might wish to avail themselves from this legislation will be elderly, they're not known for having sort of very steady hands. And if it, for example, was an injection, suppose the person's got Parkinson's disease, there's no way that they could either hold the necessary cup or whatever they've got, or certainly inject themselves. But in any event, a lot of elderly people have very shaky hands, and quite frankly, the provision is unworkable. And I know that in the past, there was a piece of law, I'm getting awful technical here, it was to do with the Criminal Attempts Act, or the Law on Criminal Attempts. This last act rule, which is what they're resurrecting here, proved to be unworkable, and it caused immense problems in the courts as to decide what was the final act. And it sounds simple enough, but I can tell you that in law it is not simple. And what they had to do in the end, they had to alter the law back in 1980 to try and get some clarification. So that's only a small fragment of the number of, in fact, problematic provisions that you've got in this bill. It isn't just the human rights legislation. There's a lot of flaw lines in it which have not been tackled. So I can understand the move of trying to be upbeat about it, but it's a bill that's riddled with problems anyway, over and above the primary issues that I've already mentioned.
Okay.
And I wish somebody would take a bit of notice of this.
All right. Good to hear from you, Peter. Thanks for calling today.
Yeah, cheers then. Bye-bye.
All right, so 28 minutes past 12. Here's Andrew with us now. Hello, Andrew.
Hi there. Good day to you, Andy, and listeners. The consultation on travel ID. I just have that Taliban government post before me now, and it says, at this stage, the Department of Home Affairs is sending out proposals to implement ID requirements for passengers travelling to and from the Isle of Man on the steam packet. And this, in essence, which I heard Mrs. Jane Poole Wilson talk about, is for keeping the Isle of Man safe. Is that correct?
Yes, it's to improve security.
Okay. So if it's to keep the Isle of Man safe, why are we going to have to potentially have to exhibit ID if we're leaving the island. Mrs. Poole-Wilson, can you please tell us why, if it's to keep the Isle of Man safe from people coming here, you're going to have to potentially exhibit ID if you're leaving?
That's interesting, because, as you say, it depends whether or not they log, whether anybody's name is logged, because presumably if somebody's coming, they'll want to know whether they're going or not. I mean, not for residents, but from people who are visiting the Isle of Man, that will be a log of people who have actually left.
And how are they even going to check on people arriving? Because let's just think, my name's Sammy Britton, and I rock up at the boat, I've got my ID, and they look at my ID, can I still get you? Yeah, Sammy Britton, that's the name on ticket, fine, okay, get on board. Yeah, and what I'm not telling them is that last week I came out of prison after serving 6 years for aggravated burglary. So it's pointless, because how are they going to know? Just somebody looking at an ID. How are they going to know that, well, Sammy Britton got out of prison last week?
Again, this just depends. It depends whether or not they actually log it, whether or not, let's just say, and this is something that the Chief Constable has lobbied for, and that is sight of the passenger lists.
But it doesn't even matter. They can log it. But, I mean, what's the point of logging it if Sammy Britton got out of prison last week for 6 years for aggravated burglary, and that's what he intends to do over here?
I'm presuming the police would know that already.
What, that Sammy Britton got out of prison last week for 6 years for aggravated... What, all the prisoners being released, Isle of Man Constabulary are going to get a list of who all these offenders are?
Well, presumably the IT systems will the liaise. I mean, at the moment, the Isle of Man Constabulary work quite closely with the police authorities in the northwest of England.
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking about prisoner releases. I mean, how? There's just no way on this planet that Isle of Man's Constabulary are going to be able to sift through the hundreds, feasibly, of names of prisoners released every week in the UK think, oh, is this person on our list?
So are you against that showing ID because already we show it when we go on the plane, but are you against showing ID on the boat?
I see there's no valid good reason for showing it when you're leaving the island.
Right. Okay.
That's part of somebody else's other agenda, that is.
Right.
It's all about power and control, these people think they have.
All right.
And if you're going to implement something, you need to have something when people arrive or they buy the ticket, which ostensibly means they'll have to buy it under a correct name, that when the ticket is bought, somehow the name is then filtered against something. And I would say, heaven forbid that some criminal name is allowed on the boat, is allowed here, and then commits an offence, because just imagine the fallout. Right. How possibly will they be able to deal with that?
Okay. All right. We appreciate that, Andrew.
Cheers.
Good point. Thanks for calling today. Mark dropped a note in to say ID on the boat should have been brought in years ago. And another message in, ID on the Manx boats is long overdue, should have been introduced many years ago. Thanks also to John in Ramsey, I think, says, Peter's right. How much money has the government spent pursuing this totally, completely wrong bill, I think you mean. These are John's words about this. Well, it's been mentioned before. It was a private member's bill, and members are perfectly entitled to bring bills forward. It wasn't in many people's manifesto, an assisted dying bill, but who knows what's going to happen at the moment. It's been knocked back by the UK. And whether or not it'll happen by the end of this administration, and if it doesn't happen by the end of this administration, it could be kicked into the long grass. It could be gone.
Ready to explore the Isle of Man? Discover ancient castles. Uncover hidden treasures. Climb the world's largest working water wheel. And learn more at our remarkable museums across the Isle of Man. Go further, look closer, and discover the stories of your island home. Manx National Heritage Sites, now open every day. Plan your visit and start exploring today at manxnationalheritage.im.
At Bond Fabrics, we're not just a fabric shop. As well as curtains and upholstery and dress and costume fabrics, we've knitting and crocheting wools, made-to-measure curtain and blind service, plus poles and tracks. Visit Strand Street, Douglas, call 611856 or see bondfabrics.im.
At Bagoad Cattery, we've been caring for animals for over 50 years. As a cattery, we care for our customers' cats and treat them as our own. Visit bagoad.com or call 321-989.
Ramsey Care Products is now opened in St Paul's Square, Ramsey. An Aladdin's cave of stock including mobility scooters, Rise recliners, household aids and more. Call 627-177 to find out more. Ramsey Care Products, affordable mobility solutions for you.
The Granite Centre in Laxey. For complete kitchen renovations, replacement worktops and with over 35 distinct styles and finishes, there's a Kuka instant boiling water tap for every home. Call 612287 or visit thelaxeykitchenco.im today.
Road racing returns to the island and Manx Radio Motorsport is an essential part of it. As the official TT Broadcast Media partner, our live coverage brings every qualifying and race session to the island and the world on air and online. So with airtime, sponsorship and digital advertising options, it's officially your best chance to reach a global motorsports audience. Contact our sales team now on 682 620 or at sales@manxradio.com. Manx Radio Motorsport, the best biking station in the world.
Do you ever feel that the news sounds, well, a little familiar? Chances are, it's because you've heard it all before. Using windmills to produce power? We were trialling those in the early 1960s. Old news. Reform of the Legislative Council? They were talking about that in the 1950s and earlier. Old news. Problems at Peel Commissioners? The Examiner suggested there was another farce there in 1945. Old news. Listen to these stories and more in the Old News Podcast with me, H, available via your usual podcast provider or direct from the Manx Radio website. And you can also hear each new podcast broadcast live every Sunday morning just after 8:30. There's nothing new under the sun, it seems. It's all old news.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
24 minutes before one. When you buy a ticket, don't they already know who you are, says 228. I don't agree with this. I'm from the Isle of Man. It's not Manx people that they should be asking for ID. It's the people that we don't know who's here as well. All you need to get into the country is a little dinghy. You don't need any paperwork, said Desmond. Desmond, always with the ribald. And also, somebody said, you can get in by jet ski. Nobody asked for that. No, that was a time, wasn't it, with the jet ski. Ken's on now. Hi, Ken.
Afternoon. Right. Sammy. May we not be called Sammy because you can get false documentation for a few quid in any Liverpool pub. That's a generalisation. So unless you have proper passports, even when you get the plane, unless your passport is, you know, the proper one and it goes through certain checks,
yeah,
you can travel on false documentation. But the main reason I'm bringing is about this assisted dying. How does Switzerland get round all this European Court of Justice? Are they not in it?
Well, Switzerland, you know, they've had Dignitas for years in Switzerland.
Well, yeah, what's the problem? I don't understand all the House of Lords. Oh, it's a bit like our MHKs, not the MHKs, MLCs, who were supposed to look at this bill. They did various amendments, so did they just waste the time?
Well, we didn't know what was going to happen in the House of Lords, and we don't know. I mean, they've pointed out that there are some deficiencies in our bill, and we don't know.
Well, I would argue we knew what was going to happen in the House of Lords if you followed their things, because they're dead against it.
Right.
The old duffers that are still there since year done. I'm annoyed about it. Did Jersey or Guernsey not get theirs through?
They did. Well, presumably theirs hasn't gone through as well. By the way, Switzerland's had assisted suicide since 1941, apparently. The first country in the world to permit any sort of assisted dying.
I don't know if they're in this European, whatever.
They're not in the EU, but they do sign up to a few European things.
Yeah, so, why can't we just get it through? I know it's the House of Lords. House of Lords is the main bugbear in this.
Well, our legislation has to be rubber stamped. It has to be ratified. And what they're saying is that there were some clauses that weren't right. The safeguarding wasn't right.
I think there was somebody, we have missed the boat with this census coming up, because somebody's been on, some doctor was on about, he was saying the majority of people in the island are against it. And it's only certain individuals that are driving this through the things. But maybe they missed the boat by not putting something with the census. I haven't seen the census form, so I don't know whether there's a question about assisted dying or not.
Well, and of course, what was, do you remember former MHK Paul Quine proposed we should have a net zero referendum as well as the general election? We could have had a referendum on assisted dying at the same time.
We could have done, yes. Double. Let me not go about going green. We're putting all these charging points in, and there's hardly anybody using it. They're just taking car parking spaces away.
But you can't park on the quayside in Peel, can you, now?
No, you can't. They were going for this rush to go green, and nobody asked how much it would cost to go green.
We'll see. All right, Ken, thanks for calling today.
Cheers, thanks. Bye.
Good to hear from you. Yes, the story about Switzerland is that they've had assisted suicide, legal assisted suicide, since 1941. And the majority of people who avail themselves of the service are Germans. As of 2008, 60%, 6 out of 10 people who had assisted suicide in Switzerland were Germans. And I'm trying to think whether it was a TV programme. Do you remember on Channel 4 maybe a couple of years ago about a gentleman who did it as well? And there are a lot of Brits who go there. I think it costs about 15,000 euros. Dignitas is the organisation. It's based in Basel in Switzerland. James is with us now. Hi, James.
Hi there, Andy. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind?
Just a retort, really, to Peter's call on assisted suicide, as he calls it. It's a terminology thing, really. He insists on calling it assisted suicide, and it really riles me, given that we've clearly stated from the get-go it's our assisted dying bill. The difference being, obviously, I'm perfectly fit today. If I was to choose to kill myself, that would be suicide. The sort of bill that we propose is one where somebody's already dying in a very horrible and slow, painful way and needs some assistance to help them along, so they're not suffering. So for him to refuse to call it the assisted dying bill and always refer to it as assisted suicide, I think is deliberately provocative.
So where do you stand on our assisted dying bill? Do you think it's a good idea? And what do you think about the UK government blocking it?
Ironically, I think it's a human right. You know, if my dog was ill and had no hope and was in a great deal of pain, we wouldn't think twice about having it put down. If I had found myself in the same situation, I would hope that there'd be some help for me. I watched my own big brother die of leukemia. He was 18 years old, and it took him several months of agonizing pain and suffering before he finally passed away, which is why you can probably hear my voice. I'm quite emotionally riled up about the whole topic.
James, I think this is possibly the nub of the matter, and that until it affects you personally, it's difficult to have a fixed view on it.
Exactly my point, because it's the people arguing against it, generally from a very religious standpoint. They'll often argue it isn't, but more often than not it is, because they claim it's a form of suicide and therefore it shouldn't be allowed, and that's their ears closed. The reality is, if you have to watch somebody who you care about dying a very slow and painful death, and they're begging for you to do something to stop their pain, and you can't do anything, that happens day on day, hour after hour, week after week, and it's a disgusting and heartbreaking thing to watch, which scars people for life.
Yep.
Just to see it happening.
Forgive me for asking, James, but how long ago did your brother die?
That was, let's see, that's 30 years ago.
And over 30 years, obviously, that pain hasn't lessened.
No, it's shaped it's shaped my view on life, it's shaped my view on the world. It's, I know that I will always have mercy for the people who are in a bad way. And I would love for the assisted dying bill to go through so that nobody else has to go through that sort of pain. And I've heard it time and time again from other people who have witnessed the same things I've witnessed. And then to hear it being put down and said, well, we're not going to call it the assisted dying bill, we're going to call it the assisted suicide bill.
Okay.
And suicide isn't allowed because of all these different religious connotations between government and so on. It's all a load of rubbish, and it's just disgusting that people refuse to call the assisted dying bill.
Okay.
Just to support their argument against this.
Okay, James, I know it's taken a lot for you to call, and I'm grateful that you called. Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy. Bye-bye.
It's 12:45, and Betty joins us now. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I just want to agree with the others who've come on, but in particular, I don't think that the UK wants us to go ahead with this bill at all because it would make things difficult for them. So I think that's the reason why they've picked at it. But I would go further than the bill at present, really, because I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe that the present bill, the patient has to take its own pills, etc. And I think it should, they should be able to be given by a doctor or a nurse.
I'm trying to remember, but I think the situation is, and it's a grim subject to talk about, I think the situation at Dignitas in Switzerland is that a driver is put into someone's arm and they then have to press the switch for it to happen.
Yes, well, maybe something like that. But I don't think it should be up to the person who wants to die to do it, because it's difficult, and particularly difficult if they have to swallow a pill, because a lot of people can't easily swallow pills. So I think it should be a bit different, but I definitely think it should go ahead, and I don't think it will, because I don't think the UK want us to do it even.
Betty, can you understand why it divides opinion?
I can understand from people who are religious who don't want this. I can understand, but I don't agree with them at all.
Okay.
But I think the majority of people on the island probably wouldn't mind it going through, because I think probably most of them aren't terribly religious anyway.
Okay. All right. Betty, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling today.
Okay. Take care. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hello, this is Doug Farragher. In conjunction with Manx Radio, I'd like to invite you to join us and learn something about our native Gaelic tongue, the language of man.
If you have children, pets or a house, talk to Peace of Mind about a will or power of attorney, which will help family members when it matters. Prices from £199 plus VAT. Find us on Facebook or call 632 610.
For a trustworthy removal and storage solution, contact Dave's Removals and Storage, offering man and van removals, clearances and long or short-term storage with pickup and drop-off service. Call 258-766 or find Dave's Removals and Storage on Facebook.
Love a proper country pub with superb food, great drinks, fantastic atmosphere and a warm welcome? Then you'll love the Ginger Hall in Selby. From fabulous Sunday roasts and succulent steaks to pizza, chicken wraps and delicious desserts, there's something for everyone at the Ginger Hall in the pub or our restaurant. Our new menu is online and Facebook. Booking is highly recommended, so reserve your table at gingerhall.im. And why not stay over in one of our 8 ensuite hotel rooms? The Ginger Hall, country pub, restaurant and hotel.
Walton's Farm Electricals. Great service, great price and stock to go.
For everything electrical for your home, it has to be Walton's. At Walton's Electrical, we have a huge stock of ready-to-go items at incredible prices. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 till 5, on the Isle of Man Business Park, Braddon. Find us online at waltons.im and follow us on Facebook for our latest offers.
Walton's Farm Electricals. Great service, great price and stock to go.
One architectural design company has particular expertise in achieving planning approval for a wide variety of projects, from landmark buildings to spectacular homes. Talk to the experts at Ellis Brown and get your project off the ground. For excellence in design, search Ellis Brown.
Manx Mobility in Onchan have it all. Daily living aids, wide-fitting shoes, rise recliners, beds and scooters, including lightweight and airline-approved models. Call in and see how our expert team can make your life easier. Manx Mobility at the top of Summer Hill.
The latest edition of Manx Radio's Breath Mindfulness podcast with Karen Hardman is available now.
Tension in the shoulder blades and the back of your neck. Let that release.
Brought to you by the Good Health Store on Station Road in Port Erin.
You see a cosy cabin in the distance, nestled among the trees. You notice all the intricate details, so you won't forget. It's too magical.
The latest in the Breath Mindfulness series with Karen Hardman, and available now at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
10 to 1. Eddie's with us now. Hello, Eddie.
Hi, Andy. While I've been on the phone waiting for you to come on, some people have stolen my lines. I was going to say I'm coming in jet skiing, so and the false ID. I think when you look at that, it's the criminals are the ones who are going to have false ID. They're the ones who, it's dead easy these days to get false ID for little things like that, just a driving license, so on. So I think probably a waste of time, that one. There's so many things that this government, we can't wait to get another one in. The assisted tie-ins up again, 20 miles an hour, Liverpool dredging, you name it. But a couple of little things I just want to run over with you, if I may,
that
concern me. John Wannenberg the other day was talking about spending quite a lot of money now to get electric charging points at places, especially the sea terminal and that, isn't it? My thoughts were, what would actually happen if we had a fire on board and electric cars ended up getting banned like they are in some of the Greek islands?
Well, luckily, we haven't had one.
No, well, that's what I'm saying. What would happen with electric cars then? That's what I'm saying, you know, for people to think about, is if that scenario did happen, which is happening quite a few places, electric bikes are up by about 600% going on fire, I believe. So, you know my thoughts on an electric car anyway. You'd have to be an idiot to drive one. The other thing I want to point out is just recently Michelle Haywood was on, and she pointed out that if we don't go ahead with Ørsted, then they may sue us for millions and millions of pounds. Now, if there's no contracts been signed, no deals been done whatsoever, it's all just they're trying to sell us something, that surely can't be right. But it reminds me of right at the beginning of when I got involved with all this wind turbine thing, the MEA at a meeting at Port St Mary School. One of their particular mouthpieces actually said the only way it will ever be stopped is if we found a Roman villa up there. You know, and these strike me as things that there's a deal been done already. Otherwise, you wouldn't use them sort of words, would they?
Well, it would be nice to know, Eddie.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, somebody should... I suggested about 6 months ago that there should be an inquiry into how all this has been handled, because to the public out here, it looks so dishonest. Either we've agreed to do it or we haven't. Let's have a yes or no. I mean, Michelle Haywood's words there to say that they could sue us. I mean, that's a bit like the bus station. Are they somebody trying to sue us for 90 million there or something?
Well, yeah, that's to do with whether or not the person, how the process was and how the person got hold of that piece of land. But that's a dispute between businessmen, isn't it?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that during the course of this government, we've got that one pending. We've got Liverpool. We don't know what's happening there. That's also another court case, I believe. And now, if Michelle Haywood is right, that if we don't go ahead with the wind turbines, then they're going to sue us. you know, let Michelle Hayward say where she's got that info from, please.
Okay. Right.
You know, it would be nice for us out here to know if they've already done the handshakes or not.
Okay. All right, Eddie, thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy.
6 minutes to one.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
A message in that just said you were talking about the Peggy yesterday, this £5 million. Why is the Peggy so important? Why is it? Well, let me tell you, the Peggy was built in 1789. The Peggy is the oldest surviving Manx vessel and a rare example of an 18th century boat building. It features unique innovations. It's got sliding keels, original cannons, and over 95% of her structure is still intact. The Peggy is the oldest complete vessel on the UK National Register of Historic Vessels. 1789. Assessed for significance based on its age, design innovations, historical associations, level of originality, condition and rarity. The Peggy's story and conservation are part of this £5 million redevelopment of the scheme at the Nautical Museum, which aims to create a memorable experience for Manx people and visitors. The Peggy's relocation to the Nautical Museum is expected to add significant value to the visitor economy and increase its appeal for further investment. So the Peggy's importance lies in its role as a symbol of the Isle of Man's maritime history and its contribution to the island's cultural heritage. Now, whether you think that's worth £5 million, well, that's your opinion. If you're in France or Europe, says John, and require healthcare or hospital treatment, doctor or dentist, the first question they ask is, how are you going to pay? So the immigrant surcharge, which is now being delayed. Yesterday you mentioned low number of children at our primary schools. The trouble is that some primary schools are bursting at the seams and others are underpopulated. Head teachers aren't allowed to say if the school is full. Right, thanks for calling today. Thanks for being in touch. Thanks to Howie on the phones. Back tomorrow with another Open Line. Have a great Wednesday.
WINT